Hey everybody, welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place. I'm Nan.
And I'm Christopher. And, you know, now that we're almost halfway through season four, I finally did some research about the show that I've been thinking about doing for a while now. And the reason is, the worst song I've ever heard on the show is in one of these three episodes. And it finally made me think, I need to try to find out if they changed the music for the streaming release, because a lot of the music is so bad. We've talked about it before, how like some of it can't possibly be how it aired because it's terrible. And I ran into a little bit of a skid because when you go to Netflix to rent a DVD, they don't even have all the seasons, which is kind of pathetic.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, they even have some partial seasons. So I just randomly got a season two disc. And do you remember that episode where we were talking about how the opening shot of a pigeon was there and they focused on this pigeon for a long time and it was missing half of its leg?
Yeah, I think it was it a seagull?
Oh, a seagull. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
So the seagull missing half of its leg. And the song, I was like, okay, this song seems kind of fake to me. But it was the same song on the DVD as it was in there. And then I Shazammed it, and the song was actually by a real band. Do you remember Autograph?
I do not.
So their famous song is "Turn Up the Radio." Yeah. Anyway, this song was another one by them called "She's the Reason." So anyway, that brought me back to the terrible song that's in one of the current episodes for us, and I Shazammed it and nothing came up, you know.
I mean, I kind of feel like a lot of these songs sound like they were made by fake bands or something. I don't know.
Well, that's an especially good theory for this one, because I even Googled the lyrics and there was exactly one hit, and it was a Chinese website about Melrose Place.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of these like songs on the show sound like they were made like in 5 minutes by a made-up band.
That reminds me. I recorded it on my phone. I just now remembered that part.
Can I tell you the cutest thing that just happened? I'm so sorry.
I noticed you were looking. Is it a cute dog or something?
So, Mina, I'm in bed. And Mina was all the way underneath the covers next to me in the bed. And she loves when the towels come out of the dryer. And Sean came back here, pulled the covers back, and put the towels from the dryer on the bed next to her so that she could get on them.
Aww.
And then she crawled up on them, and now she's curled up on the towels and sleeping. And it was really cute that he did that. Like, it was so sweet and nice.
Cute.
But she loves a towel pile. She loves it.
Well, that is a dog that takes after my own heart, because so it's taking me a minute to find this video on my phone, because I've had one of those super active weeks in terms of making TikToks that I actually got paid for, which is kind of cool. But that leaves me with a phone full of stuff. Damn it. Oh, here it is. So, I just have to advance to the part where they play the song. What? I am so bad at playing video on my phone. Let's see. Okay. Nope, that just made it bigger. I'm just gonna. Actually, this is a good test. Can you hear the Melrose Place theme right now?
Yes, okay. I can hear it.
All right. So it's just gonna take a second. It's already at Jack Wagner, and you know it's in alphabetical order. So Daphne Zuniga and special guest star Heather Locklear as Amanda.
Are we gonna get flagged for a copyright violation?
Oh, maybe. But I doubt it. Okay, so here is the worst song that I've heard so far on Melrose Place ever.
What is
It's so bad.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that that song sounds like it was written in 5 minutes for the show by somebody.
Like somebody who works the craft services table but has always told them, if you ever are in a jam and you need some music real quick, I have a Casio here and I can help. But yeah, when you Google the lyrics to that in a quote mark so that you're looking for the exact phrase, there's exactly like one Chinese show recap of it. I didn't even bother clicking through. I just like, oh, that's all there is. So, yeah. So my hypothesis was wrong, because I thought all of the music was made up, like that terrible one that we just heard. But then the very first song I heard when doing DVD research was a real song by a real band. So... it's just a mix, and we are so far removed from the time that it aired that we expect all of the music to be way better than it possibly could have been.
Yeah, true. Well, that song definitely sucks, and the music on this show mostly sucks. Except for that bangin' theme music, which, you know,
yeah.
I have really learned to love that song.
I'm really looking forward to, because I refuse to watch Out of Order. I really want to see if they use the same music when they did the reboot.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Or like some like updated version that sounds like, you know, because that squealing guitar is so early 90s,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I was trying to think of some other TV theme where they made the original version worse later on, but it's escaping me. I remember being crushed by it, but I can't remember what show it was. It'll come to me, maybe.
Was it the full confession, I did watch the first few episodes of Fuller House, the Full House reboot.
Oh, I've watched a lot of that.
in some like moment of, I don't know, just sheer desperation. And I can't remember, did they make like a modernized version of that song?
Yeah, and whoever's singing it, she's like, really, really singing it.
Yeah.
That is an enjoyable sitcom. I don't hate it, even though I'm not a huge fan of Candace Cameron Burr.
I mean, Candace Cameron Burr sucks. but I did, despite myself, kind of enjoy the episodes that I watched.
And also, I'm a huge, huge fan of Jodie Sweetin. I don't know if you ever read her memoir. She and I have a lot in common, it turns out. And that's all I'll say about that.
Oh, all right. I'm going to guess it's drugs.
Well, like I said, that's all I'll say about it, but you can read it and come to your own conclusions.
So that's my, put my money out there. Maybe I'll read it just so I can find out how right I truly am.
It's a good book. In fact, I would like to, you know how they make special names for different people's fans? I'm a sweetener.
Oh, yes. Nice. cool. Well, should we get started?
Yeah, let's do that. And what a perfect episode name it is.
Oh yeah, let the games begin. Dun-dun. Man, just when you think this show cannot get crazier, it gets crazier. So although I've kind of lost the ability to even find anything crazy.
Right. Like
in this show.
Like, it's just that we've become accustomed to it and we want more.
Like, it's just like, okay, sure, yeah, that happens. Yeah. You know, no real surprises. Although sometimes just the thing that's really, truly beautiful is not necessarily the twists and turns of the show. It's the way that they are acted that really puts it over the top. So Amanda meets with Allison, Billy, and Brooke at D&D to let them know she's throwing a party to celebrate Melrose Place being fixed up. Brooke says she has a new client and brings in Jack, who's setting up a new cable system in LA. Amanda asks Brooke to leave so she can confront Jack, and he assures Amanda that his fiance, Rita's a real person, and she says he needs to find a new agency, but Brooke already introduced him to the board of directors. Billy wants to dump Jack as a client, but Amanda says he'd just find another way in. She tells Billy about a time Jack beat her up, so she tried to run away, and Jack kidnapped Palmer and said he'd kill him if she ever ran away again. She thinks Jack will go after Billy if they don't play along.
You know, I have a question here. How come Palmer Woodward never just put a hit out on Jack? Like, the dude kidnapped him, and he never just had him taken care of?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is an excellent question. Jane confronts Joe at the office because Richard called off their marriage. Jane, I love how that sentence is just like, she confronted her because she, and then it like escalates extremely quickly. Jane says they're no longer friends and Joe should consider herself hired help. Joe heads to Shooters, wanting a quiet dinner out with Jake, but he has to work because a couple of people called out. He suggests they go to Amanda's party, make an appearance, and then go bone in her apartment. Sounds good to me. Allison goes to Haley's boat for another dinner, and she wonders why they met up in person when there wasn't much business to discuss. And she insists she won't be part of any scheme to break Brooke and Billy up. And Haley wonders aloud what it would be like to kiss her. So they
finally
do. Haley is hot. Yeah. All right. Like, very hot.
I thought Steve was hot. Haley's even hotter. Although Steve is more my type, but Haley is, what's the word? When you're not, when an opinion doesn't matter, when someone is like empirically hotter.
Oh, yeah. Like intrinsically hot?
Or
inherently hot? Universally hot?
Something like that.
He's like the universal donor hot. What's funny is he kind of reminds me, what is the name of that actor that did Warlock?
Julian Sands. Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He kind of reminds me of Julian Sands, who is also not my type. I don't really go for blondes, but listen,
Julian Sands is hot.
Julian Sands could get it.
I recently rewatched the Warlock movies and it was nice to appreciate once again the hotness that is Julian Sands. Do you remember when I made a flowchart? It was the first flowchart I ever made. I posted it on Facebook. You were back on Facebook at the time. But it said, should I watch this movie? And then the question was, is Julian Sands in it? And if you said yes, it said watch the movie. And if you said no, it said find another movie. And went back to the first question.
I don't remember that, but that sounds legit.
Yeah.
So Jane interrupts Richard while he pouts in his office and designs menswear. She insists she loves him, but he doesn't buy it. She says they should take wedding planning slow and enjoy their time together, but he blows her off when she invites him to the party at Melrose Place. He says she can't keep the engagement. She can keep the engagement ring, but the relationship is strictly business. At the party, Jake asks Jane where Joe is, and Jane says she has no idea what Big Mouth Joe said. But there was no shoot that day. Shelley stops by to pick up her stuff, and Jake offers her some food. Jack crashes the party, which he learned about via Brooke. Amanda wants him to leave, but as his tone with Billy becomes more hostile, she says he can stay. Brooke asks Allison where Haley is, and Allison says she should call him. Peter and Kimberly arrive, and Kimberly apologizes to everyone, specifically to Amanda, who accepts her apology. Shelley is ready to head home, but has had one too many beers, so Jake offers to drive her home. Peter introduces himself to Jack and tells Amanda that Kimberly's parents are drawing up formal paperwork for her to sign, protecting them from future lawsuits. Billy tells Peter that Jack used to beat Amanda up. At Shelley's new place, she takes her top off and makes a move for Jake. He politely declines and leaves. Yay, Jake! He's, the next morning, Joe confronts Jake because when she arrived late to the party, he was gone. He's mad that she doesn't have a room in her life for him. And she assures him that she does, and that she doesn't want to compete with some blonde. these two are killing me. Like, guys, come on, just get it together. Amanda blows Brooke off when she tries to apologize for Jack's appearance at the party, which puts Brooke in the right place and time to see Haley knock on Allison's door. He couldn't sleep. They need to talk. He wants to know why she's been avoiding him since they kissed, and she admits she's been thinking about him too, but she can't rush into anything, of course, and Brooke watches through the blinds as they kiss again. The next morning, Brooke spots Haley leaving Allison's and goes down to confront her. Having overheard when Haley arrived, she's able to pretend the things he said to Allison were standard lines he always uses. Richard and Joe review the slides from their photo shoot when Jane arrives unexpectedly. She spots the slides and explains that they're the new menswear line and that he designed them. She tries to update his sketches, but he says Richard Hart Menswear is his own company and she's not part of it. Like, Jane, this part I was like, you know, like that thing where, like, she was like, oh, these are really great, but I think if we do this and this and this, it could make them better. Like, she just got here 5 seconds ago. Slow your roll. Yeah. You know, like, she's turned into such a, like, so bossy.
Yeah, she's really, stepping into that role and making yourself comfortable in it.
Right. Peter finds Amanda at the hospital and offers his help with the Jack situation. She says she's meeting Rita that night and doesn't need his help. Allison returns to Haley's boat to let him know what Brooke said and that the night before was perfect, but maybe that's all it should be. But of course, they kiss some more.
Why is Haley at his boat so often? Like, he has the mansion.
I don't know. That's a good question. Because it's not like they're going out on the boat. Like, they're just sitting on the boat in the dock.
Like, I would rather be at the mansion, I think.
I mean, me too. Like, bumping up and down on those waves for no reason? That sounds annoying. Amanda arrives at Jack's place to meet Rita. But instead of a fiancé in the sitting room, they find the gigantic painting of Amanda. Jack explains Amanda's the only woman he'll ever marry and that she's his for the rest of her life. all right. Also, like, nothing about, like, okay, no shade, but, like, they don't look like they're in the same age group. Amanda and Jack.
Like, you're saying Amanda looks older?
Yeah. Hey. I mean, I don't want to be a hater, and I might be wrong. Well, I might be just projecting the fact that Heather Locklear has always been significantly older than me onto this character.
She was born in 1961, and that's Antonio Sabato Jr., right?
Yes.
And he was born in 1972. You're onto something here.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this relationship feels... Not that that can't happen.
Yeah, she's just the original cougar, is what we're saying.
I want to say that can totally happen, but it just feels weird in the context of this show. So yeah. Yeah, I had a feeling that Antonio Sabato Jr. was more in my age bracket. Yeah. You know? So there you go. And a Henry impersonator shows up at Sydney's door and scares the shit out of her. She screams and tries to slam the door, but Michael's there too, and he blocks it and laughs at her. The actor's name is Mark Paul, and Sydney's convinced their plot could work. Peter and Kimberly think it's a good idea to go to the party at Melrose Place for some reason. Well, didn't Peter think that she should apologize to everybody? Like, go there?
Yeah.
To the scene of the crime? Like, wasn't that the whole
thing? It was, but I just feel like maybe the party is where they're celebrating rebuilding the building that she blew up is kind of an awkward time to do it.
I mean, I'm not saying it was a good idea. I'm just saying that I think that that was why he thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. I'm just disagreeing with his judgment.
Oh, okay, I see. He's like, this will heal you, going back to the place where it all went down and telling everybody sorry. Sydney was listening through the door, so she and Michael decide Mark Paul will be making an appearance too. Matt goes to his parents for dinner and explains that he can either have his job back or $50,000. They think Matt should go to medical school, but he thinks doctors only care about money. Okay. They fight until Matt's mom leaves the table and his dad leaves to check on her. Later, Matt finds his dad sitting alone while his mom's out at Bridge Club. It's pretty obvious Mr. Feeling is about to have a heart attack, even before he starts a speech about living life to its fullest and pursuing every opportunity. Yeah, I was like, oh, just get to the heart attack already. We know. Matt says he's not sure what he really wants, and Mr. Fielding assures him that he'll be happy as long as Matt is. Then he drops dead. Too bad Matt didn't finish medical school at the hospital. Excuse me, I had to burp. At the hospital, the doctor tells Matt they've been treating Mr. Fielding's congestive heart disease for 2 years and that there's not much they can do.
You know, it didn't occur to me just now until how weird it seems to me that Mrs. Fielding has Bridge Club after dinner. Like, how late do these people stay up? Jeez.
I mean, I don't know, but my mom had Bridge Club when I was a little kid. And yeah, I think it was like one night a week or something she would go out and play bridge, which is so funny to think about. That's such an old school thing, Bridge Club.
Well, and I grew up in a bowling family, and like my parents and even us, when we did the family foursome league, we would be at the bowling alley for a league games, like three games in a row that started at 6:30 p.m. and that's just such a different life than what I lead now. Like,
right.
I am usually heading to bed at 7, so.
Let's see. At the party, Peter encourages Kimberly to head down to the laundry room. Alone, of course. Why would you do that?
Yeah, shouldn't he be there for support?
Right? Mark Paul is there and totally fools her, even though it's a minor resemblance at best. The next morning, Kimberly tells Peter that Henry's back. Mark Paul lurks outside, but Kimberly won't tell Peter because she's afraid she'll get sent back to the psych ward.
Did they name him that because of head of the class? Or sorry, Saved by the Bell. Mark Paul Gosselaar.
They're like, what can we name him?
Mark Paul.
Matt and Mr. Fielding. Also, here's the other thing about the... So they find out that he's been treated for congestive heart failure for 2 years. And so... If you were already under treatment for that and you're sitting in the chair talking to your son and you start having all these symptoms, wouldn't you just immediately be like, I think I'm having a heart attack? Like, wouldn't he have seen it coming and said, call 911 or something?
Maybe. Or unless he just felt like, I can't fight anymore. It's my time.
Matt and Mr. Fielding have a heart-to-heart talk in the hospital just before he dies. Mr. Fielding says Matt is all he could have ever hoped for. Sydney and Michael have a call-in radio show. Okay, this was so good. This was so good. Also, Dr. Joyce Brothers. guest starring, yeah, right, in this episode.
And another.
And another as this radio host,
as
right?
Herself.
That's what she, yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, Dr. Joyce Brothers, for y'all who don't know, very 90s situation. So, yeah, look it up.
The only thing that could have made it better is if it was Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
I still need to watch that documentary. It looked like it was really cute.
I didn't realize there was one.
Yeah, I think it's on Hulu. Nice. Or it might be on HBO Max. But anyway, there's a Dr. Ruth documentary, and she is just the cutest little person. Sydney and Michael have a call-in radio show on as they work late in the office and happen to be listening when Kimberly calls in. She explains her problems began when she married an egomaniacal doctor who tried to kill her, which Sydney loves, until she goes on to say that the cheater on her, that he cheated on her with a pipsqueak ex-hooker. They resolve to make it her even crazier.
And that
is the end of the episode.
Ooh, well, obviously, we're heading into suspenseful territory with season 4, episode 8, Dial M for Melrose.
Oh, my God.
for those of you who didn't catch the reference, it's based on Dial M for Murder, which is a Hitchcock movie, right?
Yes.
And for those who don't know, Alfred Hitchcock directed suspense movies like Psycho and Rear Window, etc. Speaking of which, I need to watch The Birds again. It has been too long. Okay, Amanda. You know, where we left off was Amanda had gone to see Jack, and he basically trapped her there and was going to do bad things. So Amanda kicks or knees him in the crotch, couldn't quite tell, and escapes his clutches and runs upstairs to the bedroom instead of out the front door. He wraps her wedding night lingerie around her neck and says to make love to him like she did then. Yada, yada, yada. He flies over the railing onto the marble floor below, hitting a chandelier on the way down. That was a nice touch, by the way. she calls Peter to ask for help. He arrives while some of the worst music the show has ever had plays. That's the song I played earlier. Not really even appropriate for that part of the show. But anyway, Peter sees that Jack is not dead yet, and he reaches for the phone to call the police, but Amanda stops him and begs for him to find another way to handle the situation. He calls an ambulance and tells her to avoid everyone until they can get their stories straight. The next morning, Kimberly wakes up in an empty house and finds a note from Peter. Mark Paul appears in the back window, and when she goes out to investigate, Kimberly finds his muddy footprints, which proves that he's real, because imagination leaves no footprints. Against Peter's instructions, Amanda shows up at the hospital, and Peter explains that if any other doctors examine him, that they will know it wasn't just a fall. He presses her for details, and she explains that Jack was abusive, and because of his powerful family, she was unable to leave without Palmer's help faking her death. Jack's attorney arrives, and Peter says that he found Jack at home alone, having fallen. Amanda sneaks into Jack's room to check on him, and he speaks. He assures her he would never turn his loving wife in, and she'll never leave him again, or he'll have to kill her. Michael arrives and finds Jack's file. Later, Peter finds Michael doing doctor stuff for Jack and objects because he's under his care. But Michael explains that Jack's lawyer has retained him. Michael floats a few theories about why Peter's so interested until Peter slams him against the wall and tells him to keep quiet and stay away. Kimberly calls into the Dr. Joyce Brothers radio show for advice while Michael listens on his car stereo.
Oh, this one was better. This one was like so hilarious.
It's like the suspenseful version of Sleepless in Seattle. Kimberly names Michael as the true demon in her life and explains that he nearly killed her in a car accident and cheated on her too. Michael calls in from his car phone and says Kimberly should be sealed in a lead vault with warning signs to protect future generations. Dr. Brothers says that she'll... I need to say the whole thing or it doesn't sound right. Dr. Joyce Brothers says that she'll put Michael on hold and give him some numbers of therapists to call, but she hangs up on him instead. The whole time, Kimberly absolutely devours the roast chicken that she made. I love Melrose Place and food. There's always something funny when food is involved. Michael comes to Melrose Place to confront Amanda about her and Peter falsifying Jack's medical reports. She shows him photos of when Jack beat her up and asks how much it will cost to keep Michael quiet. After she explains just how bad the abuse got, he says he'll keep their secret and that he'll lie to Jack's lawyer. I wonder if he's still super in love with her. He never talks about it anymore. Kimberly comes to Peter and Michael's office looking for Peter, but Sydney tells her that he's in with Amanda. She goes on to explain that Peter doesn't love her and is only with her to work out his guilt about his own sister. Peter brings Amanda a big snifter of brandy, and she cuddles up to him for comfort as Kimberly yells for him from down below. She doesn't care that she might be committed again because she's devastated that Peter lied to her. The cops arrive and take her away, but by morning she's back at Peter's. Kimberly mentions his sister, so he knows Sydney blabbed. He opens up about his sister and how she's the reason he became a doctor in the first place. Mark Paul shows up to peep in on Kimberly and runs away when she brings out a bat. She chases him to the pool, where his fake mustache gets wet in a sprinkler and comes loose. He admits that Michael and Sydney paid him to pretend to be Henry.
I literally thought for a second that she was going to actually kill him, that, and it was going to be like...
all over again, you know, just like the first time.
Well, and also just like now they like looped this poor actor to do this thing, and then he got murdered by her. So I was happy they didn't go that route, because that would have been actually kind of upsetting. Yeah. But I thought for a second we were going there.
Upsetting, but also kind of awesome.
I mean, upsetting, but also it's Melrose Place.
Jack goes into cardiac arrest, and Amanda watches with bated breath while Peter revives him and is unfortunately successful.
Aww.
Damn it. Jake arrives at Melrose Place and overhears Richard and Joe giggling up in her apartment. He comes up to say hi, and they try to get him to stay, but he won't. Billy and Brooke join Allison and Haley for dinner at the mansion so Haley can announce that he and Allison have fallen in love. That, you know, it is weird to think about how to tell people you're dating back then, because it's not as easy as just, you know, posting a picture on social media. Like, look.
And changing your relationship status.
You know, you had to, like, really think about it back then. I wouldn't know. That stuff never happened to me in the 90s, but no,
I mean, 90s. I didn't date anybody in the 90s.
Yeah. I can't say the whole 90s. The late 90s was when like I actually started dating and came out and stuff, but
I did date people in the pre-social media era. And I mean, thinking about it, I was in college though. So it was like college, you know, you're just like seeing your friends constantly, so telling them what's going on is not hard.
Yeah, you're not busy professionals at an ad agency like these people.
No, you're hanging out in the dorm lobby and like constantly together.
Playing some ping pong at the student union.
Oh my God, I miss college so much.
I hated it. Let's see. Even though they're okay, Allison is convinced that she hurt them somehow, and by them, I guess I meant Billy and Brooke. Whatever. Jane and Allison go jogging, so Allison can catch her up about Haley. Jane tells her Richard called off their engagement because of Joe, but she's keeping the engagement ring and she's wearing it, and she plans to win him back. Joe comes to Shooters while Jake gets ready to open, and they each admit that they're jealous and that they've missed each other, and they both need to work on their stubbornness. No shit. Of course, Shelley shows up just then. She has a computer to bring the books at Shooters into the 90s and asks if Joe knows anything about computers. And Joe replies, just that they're good for playing games with. Don't strangle yourself with all those cords, Shelley. Matt and Mr. Fielding get back from Mr. Fielding's funeral, and she tells him that the only ceremony Mr. Fielding ever enjoyed was Matt's graduation. She's grateful Mr. Fielding got to hear that Matt is going back to medical school in his final moments. So now, of course, Matt's going to have to do it, right? Like, Haley brings Allison breakfast in bed wearing an absolutely amazing robe. They coo at each other, and Haley asks her to move into the mansion, at least for a couple of weeks to try it out. She needs time to think about it, but she's clearly happy that he asked. Brooke and Billy arrive at Melrose Place after work and find Allison on her way out with luggage. She explains that she's moving in with Haley and that they love each other very much, and asks Brooke not to shut Haley out of her life. And Brooke just can't believe that Allison's moving into her house. Joe stops by Shooters to tell Jake they're going to the Rose Bowl, and he blows off his computer lesson with Shelley. And that's the end of that.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. Well, that brings us to this episode, episode 9, which is called Amanda Unplugged. The postcard wiggle is back. We'd gotten some there for a minute we were getting these like clearly live, you know, helicopter shots of downtown LA because you could see the cars driving. But postcard wiggle. Amanda hangs around in Jack's hospital room for some reason, and the nurse suggests talking to him and touching him as it's often beneficial for coma patients. She reminisces out loud about times he beat her up and says she hopes he dies. Matt, good for her, by the way. Matt stops by Michael's office for a recommendation to go back to medical school. Michael laughs at him, but Sydney gets him to sign it. Peter confronts Michael and Sydney about hiring Mark Paul to terrorize Kimberly. She arrives just then to thank Michael and Sydney and give them flowers because since she found out about Mark Paul, she feels cured. Jack's attorney stops by the hospital to collect her signature on an agreement not to sue him in the future. She says to send it to her lawyer, and he says it'd be easiest if they take care of it right away, implying it could be more difficult if Jack's crime pals get involved. Mm-hmm. Sydney steals flowers off a cart in the hospital and pretends to be Jack's niece. His lawyer overhears and says she's not his niece, so she says it was a polite way of saying they'd been having sex. He says she better not be after Jack's money, which probably gives her the idea to go after it. Dr. Joyce Brothers calls Kimberly to offer her a chance to guest host the show because that makes sense. Yes. But also, yes. Like, yes. This is so good. In the morning before work, Billy accidentally knocks open Brooke's diaphragm case and discovers the diaphragm is in it. She admits she's been trying to get pregnant, which pisses Billy off. When he gets to D&D, Allison asks him to look at a dress she's thinking of getting for a nice dinner with Haley. Why would you ask him that? Like, why would you ask your ex-boyfriend?
Yeah, that's kind of rude.
Hey, blah, blah, blah. That is
ex-fiance.
Rude. Yeah, ex-fiance. Right, exactly. He tells her he had a fight with Brooke, but won't go into the details. Jane comes to Richard's office to say it's time to go to Hawaii, but he says they need to work on the summer line. She says the trip would be a perfect inspiration, and he asks if it would also help her grow to love him. Jane says they should still go, even if the trip is strictly business. So he says Joe should come too. Uh-oh. Jake checks in with Shelley in the shooter's office. Business is slow and money's tight. Joe arrives to tell Jake she has to cancel so she can get ready to go to Hawaii. He gets pissed. Joe leaves, and Shelley makes Jake dance with her, which leads to her big idea. Dance night at shooter's. Before dinner, Allison makes things awkward by asking Haley if, because like people definitely want to go dancing at a sports bar, you know, like that feels really like the thing that people are looking for.
I don't remember if I got it into the outline, but they decided that it would be Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah, because people like really want to go dancing at a sports bar on a Tuesday.
I mean, I do, but.
I mean, listen, if it starts at 6 p.m., count me in.
Well, but... you know, I was about to say, some of the best times I've had clubbing were at, like, sports bars that were open for after hours, like, starting at 6 a.m. on Sundays, because, you know, they just needed a place to have it.
Right.
And, yeah, and so to this day, like, I really wish I lived near a place that was open Saturday and Sunday mornings for dancing, just because that's the time that I am up and want to do stuff.
I know, like, that's got like this weird overlap where it's like people who do cocaine and people who are 50,
yeah,
and want to go dancing.
Yeah, and
we can all hang out together.
Won't it be great? God, I remember one time my friend and I had not gone out the night before, and we had not done any kind of drinking or anything else, and we went down to the after hours, and I'll never forget, we opened the door to the club, the bar, and all this steam came billowing out, and we're like, oh my God. And we go in there, and she's like, everybody here seems really fucked up today. And I was like, that's just the way it is. You're just not along for the ride.
Yeah, you're just not, yeah, you're not like, you're not on the same level. Yeah. But normal, it's always like,
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you're, today is no different.
Oh, that steam thing made me, ooh, gross. so before dinner, Allison makes things awkward by asking Haley if Brooke's mother had a career. Luckily, the doorbell rings. Allison has sent the staff away and ordered a pizza. He asks her to grab a bottle of wine and apologizes for forgetting she doesn't drink, but she jokes that the wine might help seduce him faster. She tries different doors looking for the wine cellar, and he catches her trying to open a locked one and ominously tells her she can never go in that room. It's private. Which, you know, obviously something's going to happen. Brooke calls Allison into her office for a progress report. Oh, hold on. That was weird. Okay. Brooke calls Allison into her office for a progress report on the Armstrong Limited account and asks how Allison likes living in her house. Allison says it's intimidating and asks about the locked door next to the wine cellar. Brooke gives her the key to it and says to see for herself while she'll never be able to compete with her mom. See, this is like, and if I was, it's like, Allison, don't fall for this. It's so obvious she has it in for you. Like... Jake comes to Hart Mancini looking for Joe, and Richard says she's too busy to see him. Jane tells Richard he has to call, and Jake finds Joe in her dark room. When he knocks, she says, yeah, and he comes in. Thankfully, the prints were already done, and he didn't ruin anything. He invites her to the new dance night at Shooter's, and she says she'll try, but she has a lot to get done before Hawaii. He's a big baby about it and even says he thinks Richard's after her. I kind of think Richard's after her, too.
Maybe. I mean, he's just so milquetoast. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
So the dark room scene made me want to laugh about the fact that people are starting to not know what dark rooms are. Like, there was a dark room scene on Stranger Things, and someone found this post on, like, Reddit or whatever, that was asking for an explanation of what was going on in that red room, that they were somehow enhancing photos or something. And it makes you think, though, because film photography is a dying art, and you know, you don't see dark rooms in much anymore. It was weird to see it in this.
Totally. Allison lets herself into the forbidden room, which is full of Brooke's mom, Laurel's clothes and jewelry, and of course Haley catches her immediately. Here's the thing, like, it would be hard to date a dude with like a dead wife. But I feel like you would just have to accept that there might still be some shit there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like this is necessarily a thing to get like that upset about. But I understand why he's mad, because she basically went snooping in the room he said never go into. So he flies off the handle. And after they have an odd exchange about her intentions, she leaves to pack her stuff. Haley admits to Allison that he married Laurel because he got her pregnant and she was rich. It was a miserable marriage, and he stayed in for Brooke's sake while Laurel flaunted her affairs. He explains that Brooke has no idea about the affairs or that Haley was miserable, and she sent Allison into the room to cause a fight. They kiss. Ah, yay! Everybody's on to Brooke's bullshit. Woo! It's not just that... okay, it's Halloween dance night, cheaters. Of course it's Halloween, right? Like, oh my God.
This is the best scene ever.
Okay. So it's not just the first dance night of shooters. It's also Halloween. Shelly thinks they should go do dance night every Tuesday and Thursday because it's a huge hit, even though the place is lit up brighter than it's ever been. Because everybody loves dancing in like full light.
Oh, it's terrible. And the other thing that's so funny is if it was really a dance night, nobody would be able to hear each other at all. Like that's right. Another thing that's always so unrealistic.
Amanda promises Billy that she'll always use the diaphragm until they decide together that it's time to try for a kid. Sydney finds Michael at Shooters, and he's bummed because he didn't get the job replacing Hobbs as chief of staff. Matt stops in for a visit while on a study break and looks like death warmed over. Michael tells him he doesn't have what it takes to become a doctor because he's too sensitive. When Matt leaves, Sydney tells Michael he's a jerk and reminds him that Matt fixed the blood numbers for him. Man, blast from the past. He points out that he could use Matt as an ally in the hospital and should encourage him. Amanda's getting wasted and can barely keep her terrible witch's hat on.
It was so bad.
Peter carries her out. He brings her to her apartment, and she drags him to her room and manages to get him to bone. The next morning, she accuses him of taking advantage of her and asks him to leave.
It was bad, too. Like, she was just awful.
So that was the first dance night at Shooters. What a party. Richard finds an invoice for a Hawaii photographer and accuses Jane of trying to dump Joe from the trip. And she accuses him of using the trip as an opportunity to have a fling with Joe. He calls someone named Alan to have him call Jane to New York. Jake runs into Jane in the courtyard at Melrose Place, and she tells him Joe and Richard are going to Hawaii alone now. Jane basically says, without any real reason, that Joe and Richard are definitely going to have an affair. Apparently, it wasn't Halloween yet at the Shooters dance night because trick-or-treaters show up. Jake gives the kids cash from his wallet, and they whine.
What the hell? Getting money is awesome.
You can buy candy.
You can buy anything.
Or drugs. Yeah. I don't, you know, like, whatever. Brooke brings Billy into her office to tell him she's pregnant. He says she's not funny, and she says it's not a joke. He tries to pretend to be excited to have a baby, but he's so not.
Oh, Richard. So once again, we're starting a new round of Melrose Place Baby Watch. And once again, they live on a second floor apartment. So we have, you know, the constant suspense. Is she going to fall down the stairs?
Yep. Baby Watch 2.0. Richard tells Joe that Jane's not coming to Hawaii, and she says she won't come either, accusing him of orchestrating the entire thing to try to have an affair with her. Because he's mad at Joe, Jake makes a drunken move for Shelley in the back office at Shooters. They start kissing on the desk just in time for Joe to arrive, obviously, to catch them. He tells her to have a nice trip and resumes making out with Shelley. Ah, I hate it. I hate this. I don't like it.
So let's think about this for a minute. Is there anybody that we actually want to see with Richard?
I mean, I would be fine if him and Jane ended up together. But like, my thing is, I understand that this is Melrose Place, and like, people are going to be cheating and breaking up and having problems. And that is fine for basically every relationship, but I kind of just need Joe and Jake to like be together or like cut it out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, this little pendulum relationship that they're on, we could use a break from it.
Yeah. I'm not enjoying this anymore. Like, at all. Kimberly enjoys a cocktail while icing her hand before crushing it in a waffle iron so she can slide her monitor off.
That is what she did, right? It did not make any sense to me at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
Understand how that worked. Was the waffle iron on, or was she just using it for a squishy thing?
Like leverage? I don't know. I feel like if it was on, it would burn.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. So weird.
And the other thing is that monitor, like, it's like a bangle bracelet, or not a bangle, it's like a cuff bracelet. Like, I don't see any reason she couldn't just pop it right off. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, I don't get it.
I don't know. At the studio, Dr. Joyce Brothers shows Kimberly around. She'll be ready for her first episode tomorrow. Yay! Jack's nurse tells Amanda he's improving and on the verge of waking up. Amanda comes to Peter's office to tell him Jack's waking up. And while Sydney listens in on the extension, Jack says it's good news because nobody will be accused of murder.
Right, just attempted murder, right?
Sydney grabs her handy dandy tape recorder in time to catch Amanda on tape saying she'll kill Jack if he wakes up, of course. Matt comes to the hospital to clean out his office, and Michael asks how his med school exam went. Matt's not suspicious at all when Michael's nice to him about it and supportive. Michael sneaks into the administrative records office and calls the help desk pretending to be Dr. Hoffman, and they just give him his password. No questions asked. I mean, it was the 90s. The connection between the hospital and the medical school test records also is not explained. Michael finds that Matt got a 498 when he needed a 500 and changes it to 502. Sydney tells Michael about the tape, and he explains that he's already been covering for Amanda, so if anything happens to Amanda, he'll go down with her. He wants the tape for some reason. He wants the tape and for some reason doesn't just grab her purse and take it when she refuses to hand it over. Amanda nearly unplugs Jack's equipment when he wakes up and apologizes and says he'll never try to hurt her again, and that he'll go home and let her lead her life in Los Angeles. It's just a trick to get her in close so he can attack her. But she punches him and he flatlines. Oh my God. Like, that's all it took. Sydney sees the whole thing and tells Amanda that's no way to treat her husband.
Oh, yeah, I think we forgot to say the episode name, too, which was Amanda Unplugged.
Oh, no, I said it. Yeah, because, yeah, I was like, this is too hilarious. So, yeah. So ooh, that was the episode. Yeah. So many things be happening in the Melrose Place.
And it was funny because I watched the first one like a long time ago, and I was having a really hard time remembering the stuff that I was reading on the page.
So let's see. What's going
to
happen?
Well, we have to hear all about a dumb baby again.
Oh, yeah. Boo. Although Billy's getting what he deserves. So.
But it's,
I'm glad that he's miserable.
But I just can't see how they can have a baby on this show.
no, they can't have a baby on Melrose Place. Like, what's that baby gonna do?
Fall in the pool.
Oh my
it's
god.
It's not safe
stop.
At Melrose Place for a baby.
It's not baby safe. The pool is like not, it's not good. Also, I mean, I need Joe and Jake to just break up for good or whatever. I mean, I would say or get together, but we all know that's not going to happen. It's Melrose Place. Kimberly like being on this radio show is the best thing that's ever happened.
That could be
to
like
me.
Its own show.
That is going to be amazing. I have no doubts. I guess Amanda is going to end up probably, my guess is Amanda's going to end up on trial. Mm. At some point for Jack's murder.
That'll be good.
So there's that. You know, my friend sent me, somebody had posted on Instagram that old famous ad campaign for Melrose Place when it moved to Mondays, and it said Mondays are a mm-hmm. bitch, and it had that picture of Amanda. And I'm just like, man, watching this show, and like, I always had that in my head, and like, I think we talked about this before, but I just never think of her that way. Like, that tagline and her face, I always thought like she was the one that was like scheming and conniving and kind of constantly manipulating, like Erica Kane
right.
on All My Children, you know? And that's not really her vibe at all on this show. That's other people on
the
show.
Yeah, the thing that she does is she's just mean. When it's like anytime that like there could be some tact in, like, she just doesn't have
oh,
it.
Oh yeah.
Like,
that's true.
Like, she loves to be like, well, I know you don't have AIDS, and even if you did, I know I wouldn't get it from you just by living.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is a form of bitchery. I just always kind of like in my head, knowing it was a nighttime soap and that tagline, I always thought it was going to be more like she was conniving, manipulative, behind the scenes yeah. kind of character.
Yeah. And like Sydney is much more of that.
Oh, God. Sydney. Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess we'll see what happens next.
Yeah.
That was, things are chugging along in the Melrose Place.
I don't even have any media recommendations this time. Oh, wait, that's a lie. I saw a good horror movie that everybody should watch, which was called Mom and Dad. And the titular Mom and Dad are Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair. It's really good.
Oh, my God. Yeah, how have I never heard of
seriously,
that?
Seriously, it's 5 years old, too.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'll have to find that.
You still need to watch The Dark Knight, I bet.
Yeah, you're right. caught me. Busted. what I'm currently watching... Okay, this is contemporary and definitely, like, very different from Melrose Place, but a new show just started on HBO called Somebody Somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if you have ever been... Basically, like, the two main characters, or I guess, like, there's a main character, and then she kind of has a sidekick, and they live in Manhattan, Kansas, and she used to be in the show choir there in high school, and, like, if you have ever lived in a small town and been the kind of person who's in show choir or band, and, like, and her BFF in the show is, like, she meets this guy at this job that she has there, and he had been in show choir with her, and she didn't really remember him, and like, he's clearly, like, he's gay, and like, if you've ever been in like a small, I don't know, like, it reminds me so much of Sherman, the place where I'm from, and just like what it's like to sort of be gay in a smallish town, and but it's really sweet, and it's sort of like everybody's middle-aged and trying to figure out what to do with their life in the middle age, which is extremely my jam right now. Anyway, I'm doing a terrible job of explaining the show in a way that sounds appealing, but it's very sweet and I like
it. Have you ever seen that Charlize Theron movie where she like goes back home?
Yes.
That was a good movie. People hated on it, but I liked it a lot.
Was it called
Young Adult or something?
Where she I liked it. I am 42, and man, I am just like loving. Give me all the shows about being middle aged and like going through your second adolescence or whatever they call this shit, where you're like trying to figure out what's my jam now?
Yeah. Because the old stuff just doesn't hit the same.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like you do your 20s and you have shit, like you have fun. And then you do your 30s and you work really hard. And then you hit your 40s and you're like, oh shit. The stuff that was fun in my 20s is like not really available to me anymore.
Well, and like, as much as I talk up wanting to find an after after hours to go dancing, I wouldn't dance as long as I used to.
No, have you met my knees? I'm sorry, what? Like my lower back? Excuse me. It's I got an hour in me tops. Like, yeah.
Oh, I just had an idea. What if it was like a dance club, but they put you in like a harness with a bungee and you could bounce around?
They give everybody like a back brace or what? Yeah, that sounds like amazing. Okay, I feel like we should start this.
Yeah. The other thing I've always wanted would be like a more grown up swing set, like one that was like three times as tall and you were in a harness so you couldn't fall out of it. And like you could climb up to a platform to swing off of to start. And maybe like it could you could flip around in it. I don't know.
This sounds like you've thought a lot about
it. Yeah, because regular swings are just little.
Yeah, they are little. It's true. Well, I guess that's the end of the episode, everybody.
Yeah, you know where to find us online, which is at Melrose Sheltering in Place on Instagram. And even the stuff I post elsewhere, I'm going to post there too. So
yay!
One place, and you can, in case you are hearing this as a random recording somewhere, our home base is anchor.fm/Melrose-place. And, you know, we might consider pulling our podcast from Spotify if we had more than six listeners, but... Oh, you know what's weird to think is, like, by the time people hear this, maybe something big will have happened with that whole Spotify thing. Right now, three famous artists have pulled their music from Spotify because they think that they should dump Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan. Wait, okay, I know about Neil Young, but who are the other
Joni
ones?
Joni Mitchell.
Oh,
and then, like,
okay.
One other one. And the funny thing about that is... like Spotify paid Joe Rogan like $100 million.
Here's the thing. I much love to them and I don't do Spotify. I don't subscribe to Spotify, and it's not all because I'm some kind of moral giant. I literally just am too old and never got into streaming. And I know plenty of people my age who do it. So it's like, I don't know. I've just never been that guy. That said, like, guys, come on. Joe Rogan is like the number one podcast all the time, forever and ever. Whether we like it or not, that's just the facts. And if you think that Joni Mitchell and Neil Young pulling their music, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, just sheerly on economics. I'm like, of course they let them pull their music and kept Joe Rogan.
Well, it's going to take like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to have to be like, a contemporary artist who is as popular as Joe Rogan. Like, I don't like that. It's just the truth. But good for them. Yeah. I mean, they should still do what they want. It's not. I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it, because I love a person with principles.
Yes.
But it's just not. I'm just not surprised that they just said, all right, peace out, you know.
I use Spotify these days just to listen to our podcast and Melrose Place cast, because it just makes it easy and it picks up where I left off no matter what I listen on. For streaming music, I prefer Pandora. Thank you very much.
Wow. Pandora, blast from the past.
Yeah.
I used to put on Pandora sometimes, like when I was home, and this was way back before Spotify even existed. And I liked it because I also don't always want to have to pick my music. I am like, I don't like decisions.
Yeah.
So I liked Pandora because it would build those stations based on, like, you know, was that Pandora?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would build stations based on, like, what you liked or whatever. And I know Spotify has, like, the capability to also do that, but whatever. Anyway,
well,
Pandora.
See, for me, Pandora, I just like to listen to an artist station for a long time, which, you know, isn't... they have a setting where if you pay more, it can be just that artist, but otherwise it's like that artist and people like them. So
no, but I like that, because then it's like the radio, but
more finely tuned. So most of my time is spent listening to My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult Radio, or Sparks Radio.
Nice.
Oh, that's another recommendation. The documentary about Sparks called The Sparks Brothers. Absolutely amazing. Oh, yeah. Good documentary.
I don't even get me started. I have a very controversial opinion, which is that I don't like 99.9% of music documentaries, because I don't like the way they do. I don't like the format. It's just always like very aggrandizing in a way that I don't love. And a lot of times the talking head interviews, I don't know. I just don't love the format. We watched the Bee Gees documentary recently, and I was like, it was fine. It was fine to learn the story. But I have many critiques. So I know everybody loves that documentary. So most people should not listen to my opinion. The documentary you mentioned, the one about the Sparks. But I don't, and I really hate watching people talk about their own music. I hate it. I hate it so much. And I understand that that's a very, like, not widely shared opinion, but
a valid one. Nonetheless.
The fact that they're in it irritates me more. And I know that everyone's like, they're great or whatever. They're nice people. I'm like, that is fine. I get it. My opinion is terrible, but it's my opinion nonetheless. I hate watching people talk about their own
music. You're saying you don't enjoy it. You're not telling us not to watch it.
I mean, everyone's going to do what they're going to do. I can't be silent. You know, like, if it comes up, I'm just going to have to be like, I'm very sorry, but I will not be watching that. Thank you. That's me. But all that to say, you should probably listen to Christopher's opinion, because it's probably the more right opinion.
It's not more right. It's just more aligned with theirs, probably. You don't like documentaries. That's cool.
I like documentaries. No. I don't like music documentaries most of the time. Although there's some that I like. Fine.
Which ones have you liked? That would be a good recommendation for people.
God, I'd have to think about it, because, like, I mean, I still want to watch. There's a Linda Ronstadt documentary on HBO Max that I want to watch.
It was really good.
So maybe I just don't like movies about men. That's always also a possibility.
You might also give the Go-Go's one a try. That one's good.
Oh, interesting.
And the Tina Turner one.
Oh, yeah. See, I just don't like talking about dudes. Mm. That might be the thing. And again, controversial opinion. Most people don't appreciate it when I start talking like that, but it is what it is.
Hey, we hear enough about dudes. We can take a break from it.
You can't fight City Hall. I feel things, and it's not, you know, it is what it is.
This is yours and my podcast for me and you to talk about how we feel about it. You don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. Cool. Thanks everybody for listening.
And we'll see you next time. Well, no, you'll hear us next time. Although we did mention how funny it would be to put our Zoom recordings on YouTube, because looking at us in front of terrible green screen backgrounds would definitely enhance your listening experience. I don't think it would, though.
Yeah, and I look like a person being interviewed in a true crime documentary. Like, my face is all shadowy. Yeah. Let us know if you think we should be posting to YouTube.
We probably won't, even if you ask, though.
Christopher is very against it. So that just makes you want to do it more.
I mean, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying why.
Because we could get rich.
Could we?
I mean, I don't know. If we got really popular, I know. I mean, one person that I like watch their stuff on YouTube, all their whole channel is just, it's called Fundy Fridays. And like, she just puts on her makeup while talking about different fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists and stuff. And her partner both have been able to quit their jobs and do this as like their full-time career.
Mm. Well, I think the difference between us and your friend is that your friend probably
Oh, I'm not friends with that person. I watched their YouTube.
So I think the difference between us and them is that they actually will put in a lot of hours.
I mean, they do some editing.
And they probably record way more often.
Good point.
And probably, you know, I'm guessing that their material is like a lot more maybe controversial and starts conversations and stuff.
She's actually really nice and tries to like take a measured approach to talking about fundamentalist people, which is interesting, but it is very well researched, which is another thing we're not going to do.
Yeah. Like I spent maybe 10 minutes looking into the music that we talked about and I didn't even.
Yeah. So I don't know. Sometimes people really like authenticity, Christopher. Mm. Some people really like authenticity.
Yeah.
And we got that.
In spades or droves or whatever the saying is. In bunches, bushels. I don't know.
Barrels of authenticity.
That's a t-shirt idea right there.
Yeah, exactly. You see, now we need merch. And that will also help us be more successful on YouTube. Anyway.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
I will. Bye.
Bye.